in the European Central Bank test that we did, they were able to run it with 200 servers, each doing 10,000 transactions a second. And that gets, so that gets you to 2 million transactions a second.
We have partnered with Tangem Wallet, a Swiss-based hardware wallet company. We all have heard the phrase, not your keys, not your coins. It wasn't until FTX and other exchanges collapsed that we understood how important self-custody is for your crypto. That's where hardware wallets come in. Tangem is an amazing hardware wallet that makes storing your crypto super easy with a completely new and secure approach. Tangem is a credit card style wallet with a chip that works with your mobile device. The amazing thing is that the private keys generated on the chip itself, Tangem app itself doesn't store any assets, and everything is on the hardware wallet, and it kind of interacts with the app via NFC, which is the same tech as Apple Pay.
Go get yourself one of these bad boys at 10% discount when you use the promo code BIDL. It's B-U-I-D-L, BIDL. Back to the show.
Today, I have an amazing personality, Mike, from Alpha Bay, Bill. And this is a project I am super excited to know more about. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Mike, before we get into more technicalities, I want to just ask you, how did you get into, you know, this whole blockchain space, related fields? How did you stumble upon?
Yeah, this is probably an unusually long story, but I did a postdoc in Tokyo. I started my career as an academic. And while I was there, I met an Estonian cryptographer, and his name is Mart Sarapira. And we became friends, and we've stayed in touch. And then in 2003, he joined an incubator in Japan, and he was researching proof of work protocols at that time. So I got to know him, and he told me about his research. And so I was very interested in everything that was going on in that community at the time. And then 2007, we actually started a company. We went back to Estonia. We started a company there called GuardTime. And GuardTime built a blockchain system at that time for the Estonian government. And it wasn't about virtual currencies. It was about data integrity. How do you guarantee the integrity of data inside government databases, et cetera? And that's how we got started. And, you know, we've been together for the last 15 years working on protocols and building products in the blockchain space. But we never thought about launching a public blockchain, a layer one protocol, until around 2020, when we started a research project with the European Central Bank. You know, they were researching the different ways to build a digital euro. And we got involved through the Estonian Central Bank. And basically, we were asked the question, is it even possible to use blockchain for a scalable retail digital currency? And that is ultimately what led us to AlphaBill.
Thanks for that, Mike. So AlphaBill, can you expand more on that? It is very interesting. It's not a UTXO model based, not account based. It's a totally new sort of, I would even say, paradigm in the money scheme. And so
I think so. And to be honest, you know, what you see in crypto today is developers, they have an idea and they just start developing, right? And they don't have the mathematical formalism to understand the limitations of what they're building. And so they build it and then they run into trouble because it doesn't scale or it doesn't perform. And they add additional complexity on top to try and address the limitations. And so we literally spent a year doing mathematics, understanding the mathematics of money, because this, we realized this work has not been done before. And to give you an example, so Satoshi started off with UTXOs for Bitcoin, in 2016, Vitalik introduced accounts. He said, nah, UTXOs are too complicated. We're going to use accounts for Ethereum, basically. And since then, there's really been two choices in the community. You can use UTXOs or you can use accounts. But let me ask you a question. Is it possible that there are other monetary units out there that could be used to build blockchains? And so this is the research we started, and we built a mathematical formalism or language to try and understand what are the possibilities. And in this formalism we built, it turns out that there are eight possible monetary units you can use to build blockchains. And we decided, for reasons I'll explain now, that actually bills, just like physical cash, are the best choice of monetary units to use to build a blockchain. And the reason that is that if you think about UTXOs, or if you think, let's start off with accounts. If accounts, it's obvious. So if you do an account-based payment, there's the payer and the payee, right? So there's two monetary units involved in every transaction. Now, it's the same with UTXOs. Whenever you you do a transaction, you mark units as spent and you create new unspent transaction outputs, right? So there's always at least two units involved with UTXOs. But when you think about physical cash, there's only, if I go into a coffee shop and buy a cup of coffee with a $10 note, there's only a single unit involved, right? So value doesn't move, ownership of value changes. And this is a fundamental difference. So it's a single monetary unit blockchain. And that has some really important advantages. Because if you think of, you know, if you're familiar with Ethereum, and there's this concept called a state tree. And a state tree is in Ethereum is basically a data structure that keeps the account balances and the smart contracts current state in memory. And so we do the equivalent thing, but with bills effectively, or with units, let's say. And that means because a single unit is only involved in a transaction, it means that you can split that tree and the two parts never need to speak to each other. And that means you can genuinely have linear scale. So you can just keep adding more and more servers. And in the European Central Bank test that we did, they were able to run it with 200 servers, each doing 10,000 transactions a second. And that gets you to 2 million transactions a second. And you just keep going. It's like the crazy thing about blockchain is, like, if you think about Google search, nobody gets impressed because Google does a million searches a second, right? But everybody jumps up and down about how many transactions per second your blockchain can do. But the reason that it doesn't work is because everybody is searching under the lamppost for the keys. Because they chose the wrong monetary units, it means that you need to add additional layers of complexity, like rollups or zero knowledge. And then because you add that additional complexity, you run into more problems, like how do you do cross rollup settlement? And all this complexity adds up and adds up. And it ultimately is unnecessary. If you sit down and think about the mathematics of money, you will come to the conclusion that bills are actually the only way to build a scalable, linear scale blockchain.
Thanks for that, Mike. Yes, once I learned about the project, I went through some of your white papers, some of the research you guys did prior year, a couple before that, the mathematics. So it's very interesting that you guys actually are one of those rare teams that looked at the problem from ground up and, you know, from scratch and try to evaluate UTXOs and account models with this bill model. Seems like it's very similar to how the actual, you know, cash works in the real world. You know, you give cash to somebody. It's the ownership that gets changed, but the bill remains the same. And so you're trying to mimic that into these digital systems. So this is, I think, is very fascinating. How much? Go ahead.
I would say that, look, we try to build a blockchain that would be as close to physical cash as possible. There's one other aspect of a bill-based system which really makes a difference. In the accounting UTXO schemes, if you want to verify a single transaction in a zero trust model, so you're totally paranoid, you trust nobody, then you download the entire blockchain and go through a transaction to verify that your transaction is correct. That obviously doesn't scale, right? You know, Bitcoin, if you go to 1 million transactions a second, if that were possible, you would need an exabyte of information just to verify a single transaction in that zero trust model. And so what we wanted to do is, like physical cash, when I give you a $10 note, you don't go around the rest of the economy trying to verify everyone else's money. The only thing you care about is the money I've given you. Is that money valid and is it yours? That's it, right? And can you replicate that in blockchain? And so we introduced a new mathematical technique called recursive Merkle trees. I won't go into the details, but what it means is it allows you, just like Bitcoin, you download in the Bitcoin world, you download the blockchain, you go through it transaction by transaction. But in our world, we can do that at the token level. So you can still have the zero trust model, trust nobody, but I can extract the token from the blockchain and go through that and verify its entire is valid and that it's mine. That is totally unique. And it really does try and replicate physical cash. It also means, for example, that you can do offline payments with crypto. So there's a couple of ways to do that. But you know, if you think about one of the biggest use cases is payments and stable coins. And we're working today in Africa on different projects related to stablecoin. To make it work, to make it really succeed in Africa, feature phones and offline payments, or feature phones, I mean, not smartphones, right? The old Nokia phones and the Itel and the Energizer phones. So you really need it to work in those devices and enable people to do instantaneous offline payments. And if you can achieve that, then there's a really big market out there. But it's a requirement to be able to separate the tokens from the chain.
Quite fascinating. I want to step back a little again and then understand the bill model again. But you're introducing a lot of parallelization flow of money or the digital money.
Yeah.
Traditionally, UTXOs with Bitcoin and stuff, you know, you'll have two outputs, right, for propagating that, you know, unspent outputs. And in the account model, that's a sort of account base with Ethereum pioneered.
Yeah.
So both have their challenges. And the challenges, could you, again, a little bit emphasize more on the challenges, the coordination challenges that are inherent in the blockchains that people are not trying to solve with L2s. But in your case, which is the fascinating part, which is really interesting, is
it comes
your blockchain
down to
solves it at L1. I mean, we don't require the amount of parallelization that is required. You don't even need L2s.
Right. Yeah, that's right. It comes down to settlement and how settlement happens. If you think about the original blockchains, they were a single machine, right? A single computer. And that's the case. It's actually the case today for Ethereum in terms of execution. But if you want to move from, obviously, if you need to scale, you're going to need more than one computer, right? Solana, for example, is still one computer, but it's highly optimized. And Solana relies on Moore's law in order, they say that we're going to get faster and more powerful computers, but we're still always going to use a single computer. So if you want to use more than one machine, more than one computer, then certain assets need to be on one machine and other assets need to be in another machine. Right. So the state of the blockchain, if you like. In Ethereum, that's a state tree. In Bitcoin, it's a level DB database of UTXOs. But it's a data structure that contains the state of the blockchain. So instead of, if you don't have one machine, let's say we now have two machines, let's use Ethereum and accounts as an example. Then some of the accounts are going to be on one machine and some of the accounts are going to be in another machine. Right. And if there's a transaction between an account that's on different machines, then those machines need to communicate with each other during transaction settlement. And that is the bottleneck. Whereas if you think about the bill model, you can have bills on one machine and bills on another machine. And because settlement is local to the bill, it means that you never have cross-machine communication. So if you think about an example where there's more than one machine for account-based blockchains, Polkadot is probably the most famous, right? Where they have sharding. So part of the state is on the parachains. But then they need to build this relay chain, right? Which sits on top and enables the communication between the different parachains. And that is the bottleneck, right? So you can try and get around the fact that the machines need to talk to each other by introducing a new layer, but that just introduces a bottleneck in itself.
Right. So you're eliminating the coordination problem by having these, tokens basically,
yeah,
being a thing in itself. That is, they are a complete thing in themselves, like it builds in the real world, and they don't require communicating with the entire chain all the time to, you know, that's what physics limits, that, you know, there's a latency built in, right? So, but then how do you get like a agreement, like a consensus, global agreement on, spent what and that sort of thing?
Yeah. In our world, and so that when you there's a money part of the blockchain which uses bills. That's the native currency of Alphabill called Alpha. Then there are tokens and there are contracts. So there are basically three types of units in the blockchain, and so the entire state is one big Merkle tree. And with the way it works is that you have two different layers. You have the consensus layer at the top, and you have the state at the bottom, so the tokens at the bottom. And those tokens are in different machines. And the way it works is that the top layer, it's called the root chain in Alphabill, and the root chain only does consensus. It receives the root hash value from the different machines on the bottom, multiple coherence, so that they agree. And then the root chain generates what's called a unicity certificate. And this is a proof of uniqueness that is sent back down through the network to those worker machines that do the transaction processing.
So it's basically...
And so you just add more and more machines, and those machines will contain contracts, they'll contain tokens, but all settlement is local. And the consensus layer sits on top and guarantees the uniqueness and the security of the machines below it. So you can think of it almost like a modular blockchain. Modular blockchain tends to be a marketing term in crypto, but it just means in our terms that there are different machines on the network which do different things, but there's a coordination through a governance layer that enables the security to work.
So you mentioned Merkle tree. So this is like an extension of the Merkle trees. Like I was reading in your white papers, it's like Adelson Valensky
it's an AVL tree, but that's, I think, an AVL tree was invented in the 1960s or the 1970s, probably 1970s. So there's not, you know, this is not, there's nothing new about the data structures. What is new is how we connect them together. So in Ethereum, you have a state tree, and every block, there's a new state tree with updated state. The way the Merkle tree works in Alphabill is that each leaf of the tree is connected to the state of the previous leaf. So you can think of the leaves of the tree as the state hashes for a particular token. And that's how we can extract the ledger for an individual token and verify it off-chain. And to be honest, we built Alphabill because we were looking for new use cases that would actually make a difference in the world. And I think the key to that, and I'll explain the motivation for it. So if you think about data today, let's think about cybersecurity. Cybersecurity today is thousands of vendors all selling point solutions. When the gaping chest wound is our ability to verify if data is correct, How do you authenticate data today? And if you go to an organization, they'll say, right, either they'll say, right, we have process and trusted insiders to manage the data, or we use PKI. And PKI is public key infrastructure, so public private key. So you would sign data with your private key and you would verify it with your public. But in our experience and in Estonia, Estonia is the only country in the world where a majority of its citizens use PKI on a daily basis for digital signatures. And the experience and learnings of that is that the complexity and cost of key management make it impossible to use for authenticating data at rest. So in the world today, data is naked. There is no mechanism to verify if data is correct. And this is partly a historical accident. When the internet was created, no one was thinking about data at rest. Everyone, you know, so there was about communication. So you secure the channel. But if you think about data in motion, it starts and finishes at data at rest. So the concept on the internet of an information supply chain does not exist today. Can you, if I send you some information, can you verify the integrity, the provenance of that data back to a particular source? It's not possible today, apart from this very cumbersome PKI approach. And so our vision for AlphaBill, and it's the reason we call it public token infrastructure instead of public key infrastructure, is that we can tokenize the world's data. So for any type of data, whether it's a configuration file in a Cisco router or an education diploma in a government database or a movie, you can create a token for that data. And that token can live with the data. It can go follow it through its life cycle. And anyone anywhere can verify that data is correct. So you can, this we call the tokenization of data. And I think that is a killer use case for blockchain in the real world. It does not exist today, primarily because, you know, tokens in Ethereum and in all smart contracts and all blockchains, they exist as variables inside a smart contract, right? You cannot extract the token from an ERC-20 contract and use it in the real world. And so in AlphaBill, every token exists as a first-class citizen on the state tree. And because of the recursive Merkle trees, we can extract that token and we can verify it. We can use it as cash in the real world. And anyone anywhere can verify that without a trusted authority.
Fantastic. Yeah, I want to know more use cases about that AlphaBill can enable. You know, the offline transactions that you're talking about is mind-blowing. To be honest. If you could talk more about that.
Yeah, so, you know, in AlphaBill, there are smart contracts and there are tokens, but the tokens are separate from the smart contract. They're in what we call different partitions. So I will create a token on-chain, and then I can transfer ownership. I don't transfer the token. I transfer the ownership of the token to a smart contract. So, for example, you can use the EVM in AlphaBill, but you don't create tokens there. You pass ownership of tokens into a contract. And we do this in the form of predicates. And predicates, you know, is just a fancy word for locking scripts that have been existed in Bitcoin from the very early days, where you lock a token and you lock it to the address of a smart contract. In our case, if I'm going to the subway, I can lock the token to the address of the subway. I can extract the token. I can go to the subway, and the subway operator can verify that I've transferred it to the subway in a zero trust model. And that enables offline payments. The other way to do offline payments is secure element, right? So you can go from secure element to secure element in a hardware device. That requires centralization, though. It requires a trusted authority. But for things like stablecoins, where you have centralization anyway, where you have a centralized issuer of stablecoins, then they can issue the certified devices that allow you to transfer the bills, the tokens, from device to device in a completely offline way.
Basically, what I wanted to know is how double spent is prevented in the build model, like build model, right? And second is the verification part. What is the overheads or the performance hit to these verification methods? Whether that effect on throughput.
Yeah, so double spending is impossible by design in the build model, because in this state tree, in this Merkle tree, each token has a unique address. And probably I would explain the real difference between UTXOs and bills is that you can think of a bill as a single input, multiple output UTXO, but instead of spending the UTXO, you transfer it. So it has a unique identity, which happens to be the address of the leaf in the Merkle tree. So double spending is impossible by design, because there's only a single, the token itself is a leaf of the Merkle tree, and there's only one Merkle signature, hash chain, Merkle witness, call it what you like, from the leaf of the tree to the root of the tree. So if I tried to double spend, if I sent it twice, only one of those would be accepted, and the new owner could verify that just using the state tree. So in terms of performance, if blockchains are going to be useful in the real world, they have to be extremely fast. And we have been targeting 1 second deterministic finality. So there's probabilistic finality, like Bitcoin, where they prioritize liveness over safety. In our case, because we need to take the tokens and use them off chain, we have to prioritize safety, because if there was a blockchain reorg, then those tokens that were being used off chain would immediately become invalid. And so it has deterministic finality. And we've designed a new consensus protocol to allow it to work. And we have in the testnet, we're able to achieve deterministic finality in 1 second. If you want to use blockchain for real world use cases, and my experience is that, everybody goes out in the world and talks about their highly scalable, highly performant blockchain. Absolutely nobody cares. In fact, I would say this. If you need to mention the word blockchain about your product, you've already lost. You're toast. Nobody cares. It's about the user experience. It's about the functionality. And blockchain, in our view, should just be infrastructure, deep underground, that is never mentioned, and it's only used to create tokens that enable verification of assets and transfer of assets in the real world.
No, well said. It's just like the internet, infrastructure just it's disappears in the background and enables all sorts of applications. So that's amazing. Seems like it's the holy grail of blockchains is the scaling.
I think it has certain advantages. There's always trade-offs, right? I would say this, though, things like the blockchain trilemma are just bullshit. The blockchain trilemma, as coined by Vitalik, says that you can only have two of decentralization, security and scalability, right? That is true for Ethereum because it uses accounts, but it is not some cardinal rule in computer science. Because it uses accounts, they have to make those trade-offs. Because we use bills, we can achieve decentralization, security and scalability at the same time. So, but it does have, it is, there is, there are some very hard engineering challenges that we're still working on. We're still trying to overcome, but I think it will have its use cases. You can't, for example, in the way you can do Ethereum, because it's a single machine, you can do this smart contract composability in a very easy way, right? So you can guarantee atomic execution of calling a smart contract, and if it fails, everything gets rolled back. You can do that because the contracts are all in the memory of a single machine. When you have multiple machines all running contracts and you want to do composability, you have some real hard engineering challenges.
Yeah, I was going to get to the atomicity aspect. I think you mentioned that in your paper also, like how you're tackling that challenge of atomicity. Making sure this is like a single transaction is atomic and And so that's
I think there are probably two reasons why people haven't looked at bills as a monetary unit before, and why, in fact, why UTXOs were created in the first place was to allow precise payments. So if I have a 50-unit UTXO and I want to do a 30-unit UTXO, pay someone, right? So that's the point. I can split it into a 30 and a 20 and transfer the 20. In the bill model, we can do the same thing. So you know, if you have a 50-unit in the tree, you can still split the tree. So the state tree grows effectively. So instead of having 150, you now have two leaves, which are a 30 and a 20, and the 50 becomes the parent. And so you can split the bill, right? So just like you can't split physical cash, but you can split digital cash. And that splitting is fundamentally different from UTXO, because in the bill model, you can guarantee that splitting happens within a specific machine. And so that enables the scalability to keep working. And so if you imagine, you could start off with a single $1 trillion note, right? And every time there's a transaction, you have a single leaf in the tree, which says a trillion. And every time there's a transaction, you split the tree and just keep splitting the tree and splitting the tree. And then as the tree gets too big for one machine, then you split the tree in two and you have two machines and you keep going. And so the other problem is that you can end up with a lot of dust, right? So you then have a lot of very small units. And that was a very hard engineering challenge to overcome, is how do you do dust collection in a bill model? And the second challenge is atomicity, as you pointed out, right? If I have a 10-unit bill and a 5-unit bill and I want to pay you 15, how do I make sure that when I pay you both the 10 and the 5, the transaction is atomic? So you guaranteed that either both bills are paid or neither bill is paid. And we do that with another protocol called the atomicity protocol, which is it's a unit in itself. It's like a smart contract, but it is a hardwired smart contract or enshrined smart contract, as the cool kids say these days. But that enables the atomic transfer of multiple units at the same time.
There's also a mention of how DEXs on decentralized exchanges on Alpha Bill can be totally different from what exists today, vis-a-vis our famous DEXs on Ethereum. So how would that be? How do you envision that to be different?
Yeah, so look, I think we want to be... what we've done is we've separated out the tokens from execution. And there are many advantages to that, security being one of them, that your smart contract can't just rug your tokens. The key thing is that we can use in AlphaBill, it's like a framework. We can use any smart contract platform. So we've built already the EVM. We're building one using WebAssembly, and we hope to add other smart contract platforms. And the way the AMM would work is that you have tokens in the what we call the user token partition, where tokens are created. And then, just as I described earlier, you lock the token, you lock it to the smart contract address. And then so you then send the proof of transfer to the smart contract. And because this is just one big state tree that shares the same root, when I send the proof to the smart contract, it can verify the proof using the Merkle tree. And it can, if it has the root access to the root, which it does, it can verify the proof is correct. And so once I've transferred it in, you can use an AMM just like you would use it in Ethereum. So you then create a balance for a certain number of tokens in the AMM and you carry on as normal. But the key point is to separate out the tokens from execution.
Your comment regarding UTXO being, imagine it being a single input, multiple output UTXO.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to think how, so the token transfers, are they considered as throughput or, you know, when we say that we can get as many, there's no upper bound to the throughput, or what in the industry without deep understanding, people call it TPS, or let's transactions per second. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to that.
Yeah.
Where does Alpha Bill kind of, I think you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, you can, I think in theory, you can keep adding more and more machines as capacity grows. Now, of course, the universe is finite. So to say something is infinitely scalable is just stupid because you easily people will throw rocks at you. But it has a linear scale. So you can add more and more machines. I think, again, what's also important is everyone thinks about scalability as scalability of production, transactions per second. But you also have to think about scalability of verification. If you're running millions of transactions per second, the amount of data that the blockchain needs just becomes unmanageable. It becomes inevitably centralized. And that defeats the purpose. So you have to consider scalability of production and scalability of verification together.
That's an amazing point. So scalability of verification, where would you put that? I think you had mentioned a couple of seconds that can happen in Alpha Bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. No, so the way it works is, you know, Vitalik talks about a zero of N. Trust model. So trust no one. And one of N is trust one party or trust one of many parties. So it's honest, right? In our case, every transaction, so let's say I transfer a token to you. When you receive the ownership of the token, you download the token. You download the token into your wallet and you can verify the entire history of that token. So you don't need to trust anyone. And that model applies at scale. So everyone can download, and it's just like physical cash, right? You verify the cash in your wallet. You don't need to care about anyone else's wallet.
Like the proof of uniqueness comes with the token, right? Rather than
checking with the
entire blockchain, it just comes with the token itself.
That's exactly right. It comes with the token because the token itself is a blockchain. And that can be pretty hard to describe, but you can, you know, it's we use the word decomposability. So you have a blockchain or a ledger, and you can subdivide that into subledgers of tokens, and each subledger can be verified with exactly the same security properties as the full ledger.
So taking an example from computing, like each node in this case, or each unit in this case, is its own a blockchain. So it's like computing, or it's like, you know, running its own verification.
Amazing. Yeah, but you don't sacrifice security, right? There's a single consensus protocol. There's a single proof of uniqueness for the blockchain as a whole. But you can take that proof of uniqueness and a single token, and you can verify that with zero trust. It is a different paradigm. You know, we're going to launch this in 2024. Our team is based in Estonia and in Abu Dhabi in the UAE. And so, you know, what I love about Abu Dhabi is that you have a very great ecosystem here of builders, you know, that have moved here because not because of the regulatory, just because of the opportunities here, because, you know, Africa, 50% of the population are under 18 today, right? So if you're looking for growth and a willingness to leapfrog technologies, right, a willingness to adopt new technologies, I think this part of the world is a pretty great place to be.
Same goes for India. And, you know, we have one of the youngest dev populations out there, and they're always looking for the solutions to these problems.
My dream for Alpha Bill is to pack a bag and go from university to university in India over a 3-month period and educate people about what Alpha Bill can do.
That would be amazing. Maybe I should talk to you about that. That would be wonderful. Short for you and awesome. So switching gears, can you, Mike, can you explain a little bit more about the tokenomics of Alpha Bill? What it takes to run, comparatively a full node in, say, Bitcoin or Ethereum, like a validator node? How does that work?
Yeah, there's one beautiful thing about Alpha Bill, and it is a concept called stateless validation. So to become a validator in Solana or Ethereum, you need to, you know, you need to synchronize the blockchain, right? So you need to download the blockchain, you need to catch up with the validators, right? And then you become at the start of an epoch. Once you're synced up, then you start to validate transactions. Stateless validation is a concept where you don't need to download anything and you can start to validate. So there's a block proposer, and that block proposer will send out proposals to the other validators in the network, and they can verify them. But they need the state. They need the blockchain to be able to verify those transactions. Ethereum community have been trying to solve this problem, and they've come up with some super exotic stuff like Verkle trees and Kate commitments and all this complicated cryptography. In our case, because of the bills, it's decomposable. So I can send, you can be a validator on your iPhone or you don't need to synchronize the blockchain in order to become a validator. So let's say I want to join the network and I have some extra computing power. I can just join immediately and start to use that computing power in order to validate transactions. You don't need to synchronize with the state of the blockchain. And that is a huge advantage to adoption, to get people, to get millions of validators to come into the network and verify transactions. So we're super excited about that.
So synchronization, that means nobody has to download like blocks, like in case of Bitcoins, like UTXO model, like full blockchains on their system.
Correct.
And then so and is there any security trade-offs as a result? That's my next question. And what is the minimum requirement to like become a validator?
Yeah, so I'll answer the second question first. You know, I think if you know, one thing I really admire about Vitalik is his dedication to ensuring that anybody can participate in the network with consumer accessible hardware. The more specialized hardware you need, the more of a risk that the blockchain becomes centralized. And so we've tried to adhere to that principle and not require, you know, a supercomputer in order just to run a validator. So a laptop, a consumer hardware is sufficient. Now, to answer your second question, security, you know, people say like security, but security against what? You really have to split security into its components. So in our case, there are still stateful validators in the network. But so this, they're generating the block proposals. So there's a balance between stateful and stateless. So consumers can come in and participate and benefit from rewards using the stateless approach to validation. But the most important thing about security in AlphaBill is that you can trust no one. I send you a token. Basically, I transfer ownership of a token. You can download that single token, that ledger for a single token. You can go through it from Genesis until the current point and verify that token is correct and you are the owner. You do not need the entire blockchain in order to verify one transaction. And that is how we can achieve security, decentralization, and scalability at the same time. Vitalik often says that, you know, that for a blockchain to be centralized, you need to have users run validators and participate in the network. In our case, for it to be decentralized, we need users to verify the tokens that they receive.
Makes sense. So this AlphaBill can be used with any like proof of work and proof of stake, right? It's agnostic in terms of
I think, you know, it could be used for proof of work. You know, you could have a proof of work and proof of stake versions of AlphaBill. You know, proof of work is fantastic. It's extremely robust, right? And Bitcoin could just keeps on going at the expense of probabilistic finality. And you really, that is one absolute, you know, trade-off that you have to choose. Do you want liveness or do you want safety? And for the use cases that we are targeting, we need to have safety. So the actual consensus protocol that we use is we use proof of stake, and we use a protocol called chained hot stuff in the consensus protocol, which is the, probably the state of the art for deterministic finality. The big difference is the consensus nodes don't validate transactions. They just verify that the worker machines, the validators of, say, tokens, are in coherence, that they're in agreement. There's unanimous or majority agreement. So that separation of duties from consensus to transaction validation allows us to achieve that.
You know, there's another interesting thing about Alpha Build that I was reading upon is you have like object-oriented like inheritance. So, you know, sort of you have like an ontology of tokens. So you can have like user-defined tokens, right? Could you tell a bit more about that?
Yeah, so, you know, there's, you know, as I said, you think of Alpha Build as one big Merkle tree. Part of the Merkle tree is for tokens. Part of it is for contracts. Part of it is for money, the bills, the fuel of the network. And so in the user token partition, you absolutely, as you described, you have this object-oriented approach to programming. So you can have, for example, an NFT, and you can have an NFT which requires royalty payments, for example. And you can enforce that through a hierarchy of inheritance. And you know, we're still just starting on exploring the use cases. Yeah, it's a very different approach, right? You still use Solidity. You can use Solidity for your smart contract, but you also have this programming language at the token level.
Fantastic. There is also mention of like, you know, how Alpha Build can integrate with, say, legacy applications, traditional Web 2 applications, and in that regard, like,
I think that's key. You know, we're working with one of our partners here in Abu Dhabi is called Dynamic Labs. Amazing, amazing team. They did the Fancy Bear NFT collection, and they're super plugged in. You know, this were they doing they are basically trying to provide the link from Web 3 to Web 2. So you can mint tokens in Web 3, but you can use those tokens in Web 2. And mostly they're thinking about consumer brands, right? So you go into the metaverse and you do something, and then you can take that and use it in Web 2. I'll give you one example. So when we create, let's take a satellite example. This is pure internet, not Web 3. But I can create a token for a satellite image at the satellite, right? I'm tokenizing an image. I'm creating a token for an image. And that token can go into an ERP system. It can go into an Oracle database. It can cross the internet. And those tokens can be stored in Web 2 infrastructure. And they can be verified in Web 2 infrastructure. So things like using tokens and NFC tags, for example, where I can scan an NFC tag. I'm not pointing to a website. I'm actually seeing the token itself and being able to verify that, because the token itself is being stored in the NFC tag.
So basically that token has all the metadata, and you know, it's kind of a thing in itself. And that is used even for verifications to like Web 2 bridges, right? So that's a fantastic use case that I never kind of really deep dive into. So maybe we'll keep that for a next session in the future with you. All right. You had compared federated blockchains, like, you know, some of them out there, Avalanche and all that, with, you know, any similarities you see
There's a lot of federated blockchains out there, and it's one way to scale, right? Where each parachain, each Definity, I forget what they call them, canister, effectively each Avalanche subnet, right? Those are federated blockchains, and I use the word federated because each subnet has a consensus protocol itself, right? So there are many blockchains. And they try and use a shared security model or some message passing to go from the blockchain to blockchain. The challenge with that approach is that you have to secure each blockchain. You need a consensus protocol, you need a set of validators, and then you need to figure out how to do cross-chain bridging from these federated instances. There's some great work going on there, but in our case, there's only a single consensus protocol. There's only a single state tree. There's only one tree, and there's only a single root, and the consensus protocol acts on one instance in the network. So there is the federated blockchains work perfectly well for like small distributed applications. Dfinity is amazing in that regard, where you have these different subnets that are used for a particular application. So I'm not criticizing the federated approach, but it does have some limitations, especially when it comes to cross blockchain settlement.
Yeah, it really clearly, as you mentioned in your paper also, it clearly comes down to that coordination issues, and then how do you manage security versus those coordination issues with side chains, drive chains, and all of that, ZK rollups, all of that stuff seems like, I mean, you guys won't even need L2s at some point if this thing could just...
I certainly hope not.
Amazing. One last question and then I'll wrap it up. Do you foresee a future where this parallelization that you're trying to achieve through high throughput in the blockchain could also be mimicked at the hardware level, right? Like at the consumer hardware level, where right now we are stuck in von Neumann architecture with sequential sort of instruction set processing, but like something like GPUs could be also used to like take advantage of the inherent parallelism.
Yeah, absolutely. But look, if I started talking about hardware, I would expose my lack of knowledge very quickly. I think there are many parallel architectures in hardware designed for specific tasks, and I better leave it at that.
Any words for young developers, especially my audiences in Southeast Asia? They're always looking for the new tech, and India.
Yeah, look, I've been to the region. Certainly, been to India about six times in the last year. I've been to Ahmedabad in Gujarat. What an amazing place! A very, very green and friendly city, and even there the level of interest in Web3 and crypto is incredible. I actually met a guy there who had written a book on Estonia blockchain, and we were in his book, and we were able to meet the guy, and he was really impressive and so much enthusiasm about building new technologies in India. It's really exciting. As I said, my dream is to go to India and go from university to university to lecture on Alphabill. But also, if we're looking for developers, right? We're trying to build a community. Most of us, started off in Estonia, and Estonia has a great reputation for developers and for cryptography and for science. And we're trying to, to spread the word about what we've built. And I think Asia is there are so many talented developers there that we hope we can get some of them to take a look at what we're doing.
And where can my listeners find more about Alphabill, what you guys are building, reach out to the community?
Yeah, we're certainly hiring in Abu Dhabi and Estonia for protocol designers. So more on the can you specify a protocol and interact with developers, as well as developers who are just extending this and building it, taking it to mainnet in 2024, I hope. We're on alphabill.org. We've got a fairly active Discord. You can contact me on email, mike@alphabill.org.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mike, for coming on the show. I would love to have you again sometime soon, and all the best wishes for your launch. And I'm excited. I'm really one of the startups that in the blockchain space. I'm really excited to see how this matures over time.
Yeah, it looks really wonderful talking to you. Thank you for your time. I think this is the first podcast I've ever done. So it's been a great experience.
You're a professional. I mean, this is wonderful.